Live from the 6th and Peabody Studio and across the OutKick Network, this is OutKick 360 with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharsky.
Jordan Schultz, the NFL insider for The Score, will join us coming up in a matter of minutes. OutKick 360 rolls on from 6th and Peabody with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine. A little bit later, Christian Hackenberg, former Penn State quarterback and NFL quarterback, joins us. He's now a part of the podcast network called The Field of 12, and they break down all kinds of college football games, analysis, live right after college football is, well, it's not over whenever they're on, when the main games are done around 8 o'clock, I'd say. They're jumping on, and they go through, and they go for a while. It's really well done with some of the best names over the last 10 to 15 years, and they mix and match quarterbacks with many others across the college game. Check it out at The Field of 12. It's the number 12. Christian joins us in hour number 3 today.
I had someone that watches the show, that sees in front of us here at 6th and Peabody, Old yeah. Smoky and Yeehaw. There is a jar of pickles that sits right in front of my station right here that is fermenting in moonshine. These are moonshine pickles. And someone dared me just during one show randomly just take a pickle out and start eating it during the show.
That would be great. I'll do there cherries if
every,
you do pickles.
Every single day.
Go ahead and pop it open.
And
you don't have cherries over here.
I'm not going to lie, guys. Ever since he sent me that text watching the show.
Every day?
Just today. I've been thinking about how good this pickle would be the whole time. It's amazing. What subliminal messaging? Not even subliminal, just flat out saying, say pickle and moonshine, and immediately, you know what I'm thinking about? I'm thinking about downing one of these pickles.
I could be in the same situation with cherry. I like a nice cherry.
I had the cherry thing, it's a little different for me because I had a buddy who had a bad experience by eating an entire jar of one of those in one sitting one time on a trip to Panama City Beach. He made his own moonshine. I think it was moonshine cherries.
Yeah.
And basically sat there all day on the beach eating them, and it was not a pleasant experience.
That's
too much.
U.S. president who died after eating cherries and drinking milk?
Millard Fillmore.
Sounds like an urban legend, but I'll look it up.
That's
cherries
what it
and milk?
That's
a disgusting combination.
He dined on a too many cherries and then added it with milk, and then there was like some...
reaction?
Something going on with the food processing at the time with, I don't know. You have it there?
No. Search U.S. President milk.
Zach Taylor.
There you
listen,
go.
Listen, Fillmore's very close. Very close. Yeah. I mean, that's a narrow miss right there.
We'll check in with Jordan Schultz when we can. We're efforting him.
It's good.
Coming up, good NFL overreaction, thriving or surviving for year two quarterbacks. But... We won't dive in yet, but the quarterbacks that we can discuss now, and we're going to ask Jordan about this when he joins us, is Tua. Tua has been phenomenal. Jalen Hurts has been excellent. I mentioned both guys in my weekly column I'm doing for OutKick for the NFL accolades and awards watch list. They're both listed at the top for me. I still have Allen leading things because I think he's the best player in the league. But both guys in prove-it years have started exactly how you would want them to in a prove-it situation with the talent that they've added around them. To me, I would describe both quarterbacks the same way I discussed the Buffalo Bills. The Bills are Super Bowl or bust. We've discussed that. Super Bowl aspirations, they come in and they beat two teams that won 12 games the year prior, handedly.
Beat them badly.
Handedly. And these two guys, these quarterbacks, Tua and Hurts, they have been exactly what they need to be for their teams in pressure-packed situations.
Really good. We were talking a little inside baseball on text today about like a potential segment that I love. This was Chad's idea, where we could overreact in a positive way about something and not be our measured selves. And if we were doing
that to be positive, my idea is negative also.
Well, no, that's great. For me, I'm usually negative, so I would probably be positive in this segment. And if we were doing that segment, I would be all in on Tua, who I've been all out on. I could not be more impressed with what he's done, but I know I've got to be cautious here. It's a small sample size and all of that. But if I was being fanish, I mean, the guy looks phenomenal.
If you just watch it, I mean, six touchdown
really
passes,
good.
Four in the fourth quarter, trailing by 21 going into the fourth. They've not just at wide receiver. I mean, they're extremely fast at wide receiver. They've also improved his offensive line. They've improved his run game behind him.
And look, negative me would say one of those touchdowns to Tyreek Hill, he had to slow down, and he caught it kind of backing into the end zone. And I could pick that apart. That's not a great sign. But he was so open that it didn't matter that the throw was not so much short as late, right? Want it to be there earlier. But it didn't matter because things are going so well, and he's so open, and the throw was fine given the circumstances of the play. It didn't matter.
He's been really good. Jordan Schultz joins us from the Score NFL Insider, and he's got a take on Tua where, Jordan, I know you're high on Tua moving forward beyond just the 6-touchdown performance, and you think we see more performances, maybe not living up to 6 touchdowns in a game, but the high level of offensive play in Miami you don't think is going anywhere.
I don't, and a lot of it goes back to my conversation with Nick Hicks. So I caught up with Nick Hicks. That's Tua's personal skills coach. And I really wanted to know, guys, what's the difference between this year and last year? Because obviously it's a small sample size, but he's clearly throwing the ball better, as you alluded to. And basically what he said was last year, it was all about rehabbing the hip and trying to just have him withstand NFL hits and not really be able to work on football. This offseason, it was all about football. And what I mean by that is arm strength, mechanics. He was able to drop about 10 pounds, a lot of body fat. And maybe most importantly, go back to that arm strength. He was able to increase his max throw 15 to 21 yards. They had an 8-week program that they put together, and it was all about how do we get Tua to comfortably throw the ball down the field, especially knowing we have all the speed. And you've seen it come into fruition. He's second in the league right now in third down conversions and passer rating at 151 behind only Josh Allen. Just to give you a sense, last year he was 42nd, 81.5 compared to 151 passer rating this year.
Jordan Schultz with us. By the way, welcome to the show. We love having you back on. Hope everything's going well with the Score. Love the content on Twitter. Knowing Miami and knowing what they did in the fourth quarter to Baltimore's defense, what's the point total they need to reach to beat Buffalo Sunday?
It's in Miami, right? So yeah. Probably 35. 35.
I think they can get there.
Yeah, they can get there. Buffalo's defense is really banged up. Obviously, they haven't had Trey White, but the safeties, Matt Milano with the pick six. So, and Ed Oliver didn't play. I mean, these are big, big-time players for them. So, they could get there. I mean, I think the spread is about a touchdown.
Yes,
I would pick Buffalo, but man, that's going to be a really fun game.
So, Jordan, I follow your work at the Score and your reporting, and based on your reporting around the Titans, I would say that the Titans see a need at defensive back at this point. That they're just scouring practice squad players with the Patriots and the Steelers to bring in to try to do something. You talk to people all over the league. We're close to it here in Nashville. We've seen the disappointment, lost to the Giants, just get utterly destroyed up in Buffalo on Monday Night Football. Is there a sense of surprise around the Titans, around the league with this 0-2 start and how they've looked? Or is it more we kind of saw some of this coming?
No, there's a lot of surprise. I mean, they were the one seed, right? So. Yep. They had a great season, and I think with Derrick Henry coming back and bringing in Robert Woods, there was, you know, even though they lose A.J. Brown or they trade him, there was an opportunity thinking that they could at least maintain or be around that level. And one of the biggest problems you mentioned has been the defensive backs. You know, I reported today they signed Terrence Mitchell, Andrew Adams, a couple of DBs. We'll have to see if that helps them, practice squad guys, but they'll be on the 53. But the bottom line is, you know, they're still, when I watch the Titans, I see a team that is playing analog. And what I mean by that, and this is, I'm not trying to disrespect Mike Vrabel or John Robinson, but the game plan is just, you're not going to win a lot of football games the way they play. There's not a lot of big plays. They don't take shots down the field. And some of that's personnel. The offensive line has been a mess. And obviously Luan gets hurt, which is a disaster. They're just not they're not playing winning football, but they're also not putting themselves they're not giving themselves opportunities to win games or to be in games even. So that's what's disappointing for me.
Wondering about Jason Pierre-Paul, who visited with the Ravens yesterday. I'm surprised he's not in the league. Is the perception that he's done, or are teams just waiting until there's a need? What do you think he's got left in the tank, and you think he's going to surface soon, if not with the Ravens, somewhere else?
Well, I reported it yesterday that he was going to Baltimore, and the first thing I asked was, what took so long? What took so long? He's 33 years old. Okay, I know he's not 27, but he's not a dinosaur. He's a three-time Pro Bowler, a two-time Super Bowl champ, and he's been a first-team All-Pro. And one of the things that I heard was, you know, anytime you get to these premium positions, you know, pass rushers, even wide receivers, you know, a lot of these premium guys that have great resumes, teams get concerned when they get older because they don't want to think they don't want to deal with a guy that still thinks he's here when he's actually down here. But in Pierre Paul's case, that's not the case. He's just like a grinder, man. And so when I asked these teams what took so long, a lot of it was, you know, we felt we had the pass rusher. We felt we had addressed it and we didn't want to spend the money to bring in someone else. And I just think that's crap. I really do, respectfully. I think he's still got a lot left in the tank, or something left in the tank, at least as a situational pass rusher. And in Baltimore, obviously, we saw against Miami, is desperate for it. And that's a position that you can never have too much of.
Tying back in Miami, you believe more in Miami or Philly right now?
I had really high expectations that Philly could win the NFC this year. I would say the Eagles.
Okay.
I think defensively they've shown more. I mean, against Minnesota, they were really impressive. I love what they did in the draft with N'Kobe Dean and Jordan Davis. They bring in James Bradbury. They did a lot. And, you know, Howie's very active, the GM there. He's made his mistakes. But the fact that they were able to limit Minnesota the way they did, limit Justin Jefferson after what we saw against Green Bay, is awfully impressive. And then obviously Jalen Hurts is playing. He's playing at an MVP caliber level. It's two games. But, you know, I can't think of a guy that's playing better quarterback.
Are the offensive linemen Cincinnati brought in, did we all just over presume that they were substantially better than the guys that they were replacing? Is it as simple as that? Are they just playing poorly, and can we expect them to get better? Is the scheme bad? What's the key to what's gone wrong for Cincinnati, where they're just as bad at the thing they were bad at last year, but they're not worse. Overcoming it?
I think they're worse. I mean, he was sacked. Burrow broke the all-time sack record in a four-game playoff stretch. He's now been sacked 21 games. 21, I think it was 21 or six. What's the number? 16 times in two games, I believe, which is the most ever in the last 20 years to start a season. And they bring in Alex Kappa. They bring in Lyle Collins. They spent like $71 million. Nobody's played well. I mean, Collins didn't have a great year last year. I think, you know, he's had a very nice career, but last season was not his best year in Dallas. And if you're Joe Burrow, I went back and I've now asked several scouts who are much smarter at me than identifying this. What's been the biggest issue? If you can say one thing, you know, and don't just tell me offensive line, give me something like, what's the problem? And what I heard was Burrow can't step up in the pocket because it's collapsing so much on him. And when he's right, he's got that ability to step up and make throws on the run, move the pocket. But he's been rushed so much now. And I know Dallas has a really good pass rush with their guys. And obviously Parsons had his day and Lawrence, et cetera. But when you watch the Bengals, they look completely, completely off balance offensively. They haven't been able to run the ball with Mixon. So I'm probably less worried about Cincinnati than respectfully I would be about Tennessee, just because I think their offensive arsenal and their firepower will eventually wake up. But to your point, the offensive line has been awful.
I'm a believer that some bad blood between franchises and a little bit of hate is a good thing for the league. And that's exactly what you have with the Saints and Tampa Bay in that series now, especially with Lattimore versus Evans. Did anything about that surprise you, Jordan? The suspension for one game for Evans, the altercation during the game, or could you see all of this coming a mile away?
I was a little surprised, to be honest, that they both got a suspension. I mean, you know, the league takes ejections seriously without question. But, you know, I talked to Derek Gilmore today, and that's That's the agent for Mike Evans. I talked to him a lot last night and again today, and they had made a strong appeal based on the fact that, you know, here's a guy in Mike's case that doesn't have a real, a very big history in terms of ejections and fines. He shoved, but he didn't actually punch. There's certain language that they use. It ultimately didn't work. They didn't get the job done. And they moved on. But to be honest, I was a little disappointed just as an NFL fan to see both of them suspended. Those are prime time players, Lattimore and Evans. And now, you know, Tampa plays Green Bay and like, they're already down Godwin. Julio's been banged up, and now they're not going to have arguably their best receiver, Evans. So I was a little disappointed and frankly a little surprised.
Are you buying stock in San Francisco now that Jimmy G's back as the starter?
I was already pretty bullish on them just because defensively I think they have the best linebacker 1-2 punch in Greenlaw and Warner. They got Tre'Davious Ward from Kansas City, who's a really good corner. They have a really good pass rush. Their defense is going to be top five in the league at best. They're worse.
Yeah.
Offensively, the interesting thing now with Jimmy is that you can do more with him. And what I mean by that is because Trey Lance has not seen a lot, I was talking to a scout about this. Basically, he said it now allows Kyle Shanahan to open things back up. He doesn't necessarily have to be so creative. You'll see a more traditional offense. And frankly, there is a comfort level with the Niners and Jimmy Garoppolo. Is he a top 10, top 15 guy? No, but he can win games. He won't lose you games. I think he had a 66.5 PFF grade. He had a couple touchdowns, 160 yards, and that's what you'll see from him. And, you know, I think as a result, they'll be more stable. The upside isn't there as much because Lance is really special and he's gifted, but he's basically played. Lance has 10, 11 games. 12 games in 3 years, going back to college. I think Garoppolo gives them a higher floor.
Only way this tweet could have been better is if you included Tom Sula in it. You wrote, Nathaniel Hackett makes Freddie Kitchens look like Bill Walsh.
Guys, how bad has he been? Is that,
yeah.
Am I overreacting,
no,
or is that the worst one start?
Yeah, I mean, Chad has just said he's done. Off of the first game, he said he's
after,
done.
We're talking about this new segment where we're going to call it Acting Rash, where we just allow ourselves to go down a complete overreaction immediately.
He did it without
and
the
this
segment.
And this is my first one where after that first game, I said, Nathaniel Hackett is done as a head coach.
But we
He's
so,
dead to me as a head coach.
So the guy
NFL.
Gets hired. All the young guys get hired. You say, here's a bright young mind coming into it. How could he be this not bright?
Worse?
Yeah.
You know what? I think the only logical explanation is he hasn't been a head coach before. And this is a far cry from helping Matt LaFleur game plan with Aaron Rodgers to call plays. You know, but Rodgers was like his guy, you know, almost, not more than LaFleur, but like the same level.
But Adam Gates was Peyton Manning's guy.
He's
so
also
he's
the son of a coach. Like, I don't know how it's been this bad.
You know what gives me pause, though, Jordan, is when the broadcast is talking about, you know, Nathaniel Hackett came in, and, man, he was playing ping pong with Aaron Rodgers and just really took to him. And they're talking about things outside of football.
Now,
is he just paid to be his buddy, and that's how he got a head coaching job?
He is different. I mean, I don't put him in Mike McDaniel category, but he is eclectic. I don't know if that's a great way to describe him, but if you
eclectic is good when you're winning, not when you're 0-2.
Yeah, but
or 1-1.
But the ping pong story and stuff behind the scenes, like you can have a conversation with him and be fascinated with what you're talking about. I don't know how he was fascinated in kicking a 64-yard field goal in game one in Seattle with Russell Wilson in his return trip as the new franchise quarterback under a new contract with new ownership, and you took him off the field. Like, I think anyone here at 6th and Peabody that doesn't even know football, if we just went outside and asked, would you do this or that, they would choose the Russell Wilson option on fourth down.
100%. 4th and 5, analytics or not, it's the right move. Just for the sake of your football team, what message are you sending that you're going to kick a 64-yard field goal and take the ball out of Russell Wilson's hands? At the very least, Russell Wilson has earned the right to win or lose in Seattle in his first game back. That is the bare minimum. And so for him to take that away from him was just asinine and inept. it was just awful. And I can tell you this, I'm from Seattle. I had about 30 friends, 25 people at that game. They said it was the loudest they'd ever heard it, including the NFC championships. There was no way in the world that that Brandon McManus, who's got a big leg, was going to make that kick. But let's fast forward the next week against Houston, the game they probably should have lost. He has a 54-yarder, but they have a delay of game. So they push it back to 59. Now he decides, this is Nathaniel Hackett, you know what? I'm not going to kick a 59-yarder in altitude. I'm going to punt it. Nothing he does makes sense. They had a third down and goal inside the 10 against Houston. I rewatched this game, so I'm ranting because I was just so confused. They had third and 10. They ran an option with their tight end. Essentially playing the Wildcat quarterback when Javonte Williams was averaging 6.7 yards per carry and was dominant. So to me, I just look at the overall picture through two games, and I could not be less impressed.
How much have you seen of the Raiders to this point?
Yeah, I didn't see it really anything of the Charger game week one, but I rewatched the Raider game. So I saw the whole second game and shocked. I mean, they were 20-0, 23-7 midway through the fourth quarter. I talked to Cliff Kingsbury after the game, and I think even he was surprised, you know, because in the NFL, it comes down to math. Like there's not enough possessions. And the fact that they could not essentially just get a couple more first downs and ice it was crazy. I hated the game plan. Derek Carr looks so uncomfortable. I've been a Derek Carr supporter, but man, he looks terrible. And, you know, Davante Adams has put up numbers, but Waller has not seen enough targets. Renfro obviously had the two fumbles, another offensive line problem. Disappointed, to say the least, in the Raiders.
I'm eager to see how they get back into more of an Adams focus. We saw that in week one. They're using him in a very similar way inside the red zone, as they should, because, I mean, if Rodgers got the Packers inside the five, chances are they're throwing it. They're attempting at least a pass to Adams in that tight quarters. I'm curious to see how McDaniels and Carr will treat that situation with Davante Adams.
Well, yeah, and part of what McDaniels has said is that in the past, he wasn't good at delegating and allowing people to do their job. And I don't know if that's going on right now or not, but it just feels like it doesn't feel as bad as the Hackett situation in Denver, but it does feel like he's a little overwhelmed, and you can see it in the offense. The game plan is not very good. It's very predictable. You go up against Arizona, who got completely destroyed. Granted, it was Kansas City week one, but you know, they went away from what was working. They haven't given Waller the ball enough. Foster Moreau is a talented guy. They don't give him the ball. And obviously the defense has not been very good either. So I'm disappointed in the Raiders. But I think there's enough talent on that team, top to bottom, 1 through 53, to still have some hope.
Final thing for you on the way out. Your sense and pulse of what's going on behind the scenes in Indy based on their start, their shutout loss to Jacksonville. Yeah. They have the Chiefs this week, and then they host the Titans. What could be in store if they don't get things on track fast?
Yeah, they got Indianapolis hosts Kansas City at home. It's a big game. I don't expect them to win it, but I think assuming Pittman is back, Alec Pierce is back, that'll help a lot. The Jacksonville game was horrendous. And another coach that, Frank Wright, it's like, you got to be better than that, man. I'm not saying you have to win the game, but just because you don't have Pittman doesn't mean that you shouldn't have any success throwing the ball. Matt Ryan has three picks. They just paid Quentin Nelson. So to me, like the on paper, they have a top 10 offensive line, at least upper half offensive line. They weren't able to create any holes for Jonathan Taylor, who had a pretty underwhelming game by his standards. There's got to be some pressure. And then Chris Ballard just, you know, for a guy that gets a lot of respect, there's certain GMs that get just the media tends to give a lot of respect to. And I'm not saying Chris Ballard's not a good GM, but he has not done a good enough job of fortifying the wide receiver room, because as great as Pittman is and as good as Pierce could become, you need more. And I like Paris Campbell, but you need more. They should have brought a veteran in. Maybe it was T.Y. Hilton bringing him back, but they needed another veteran in that receiver room. And as a result, not having it, you're starting to see the problem. So I expect them to be 1-2 against Tennessee, and That whole AFC South, fellas, is completely wide open. It is completely wide open. And even at 0-2, you guys are still in it, to say the least.
Well, Jacksonville's saying the same thing. Why not us? It's the AFC
Jacksonville's
South.
Jacksonville's better.
It's the AFC South.
But now we see the difference from Urban Meyer to Doug Peterson, especially in the quarterback. I mean, Trevor Lawrence, he's obviously a really talented guy, number one pick, but he looks like a totally different player. They're actually using James Robinson. They're saying to Etienne, we're going to use you, but we're going to work your way up. This is Robinson's backfield. That was the right move. We heard all throughout camp, his Achilles is there, and you never really know. But Robinson looks great, too. And obviously, they bring in Christian Kirk. He's been awesome. So I'm excited about the Jags. I am.
They're in a very undervalued, interesting story to this point because they have a high-priced free agent they brought in. You mentioned Kirk. He's playing well. ETN, they're balancing him run and pass. And Trevor Lawrence looks comfortable and confident.
And the division's coming back.
And it's the AFC South. Yeah, exactly. Jordan, always great, man. We appreciate you joining us. We hope to have you on again soon. Enjoy your work with the Score as well, both NBA and NFL, with all the great coverage.
Mostly NFL, little hoops here and there. But you guys talk hoops too, right? So we'll do it again. Any football, basketball, whatever you want. I'll do it.
We'll do it.
Pump up Jeter.
Yeah. Derek Jeter right there.
Yep.
Thanks, guys.
You got it.
Thanks,
Jordan. Jordan Schultz. Schultz_report is where you can find him on social media. Coming up, you have two options, thriving or surviving. We're going through the year two quarterbacks and discussing which one we would choose for each player right now in the league. That's next on Outkick 360. So we have still yet to see a rookie start right now in the league this year. It's been the first time in 15 seasons a rookie didn't start week one for at least one team. Outkick 360 rolls on. There are a number, though, of year two quarterbacks, and that led to a down year at quarterback needs across the league. Thriving or surviving? We can't play the middle here. You got to go one way or the other, and we'll go in order of the year two quarterbacks and where they were drafted. Number one overall to Jacksonville, Trevor Lawrence. And I'll start, and then we'll rotate.
Okay.
Thriving. He is confident. He is on point. And watching him at home against Indy, I think he now knows he can trust multiple players within that offense. His offensive line did a nice job for him after not such a good start in Washington. I think he's thriving under Doug Peterson and the fact that they're healthy. And, you know, we don't see it often. Free agent signing comes in. He's a number three in Arizona. They pay him like a number two, and he's playing like a number one. That's a perfect situation for a young quarterback.
I think he's on the come for sure. I like, you know, look, Christian Kirk's overpaid. Nobody disagrees with that. But I don't object to what they're doing in terms of we're going to go get you a guy. He's going to be the guy. And the finances don't matter once you hit the field.
If you have the money, you got to pay what you got to pay to get him. At least he's an upgrade.
I think they bid against themselves even there.
They did.
But I found a good price on him. We bet him. You doubled it and said he'd score two touchdowns. He did. And so I think the surroundings, Peterson, I think all that stuff's going to take some time. But you went out and beat a team that you're good at beating at home.
Yep.
You did it very effectively, efficiently, thoroughly.
Yep.
Trending the right direction, and he played well.
On Lawrence, just briefly, the thing I like around him is the same front office and Peterson being coming in, like who's in charge and who's doing what. Are they going to get someone that comes in that's an advisor, whatever. The fact that they were very deliberate in signing Christian Kirk.
Yes.
They identified him and went after him among other options this offseason. They bought stock in Christian Kirk, and so far he has done a phenomenal job of paying back in production what they gave him in salary.
I want consistency from
Lawrence. Early. I think Trevor Lawrence is thriving based on the vibe in Jacksonville right now where they're looking around going, why not us? After back-to-back years, with the number one overall
pick. And again, it's not just them. It's the
trend,
the division.
The trend is good. He was terrible in week one of QBR 48. He was really good this last week. So that's the right progression from game one to game two. But he's 1 for 2, I think, from a performance standpoint. 80% of his passes, over 80% completion percentage this last week, 25 for 30. I like, after this week, after the first week, I was asking the question, is this guy going to be good? I'm not sure. We got a little bit more evidence that he is on the rise in week two because that was a really good performance. Indy was terrible, but they were terrible in large part because Trevor Lawrence was outstanding in game number two after a rough start to the season. So I like where he's headed right now. I'm still not certain on him. I'm not completely sold, but I like that week two performance.
So now we get into some of the muck here.
Yeah.
Zach Wilson is just surviving, right? We can all agree to this point.
Yes. But I'm not ready to be done with him.
No, but
I
mean,
we saw I was up there.
He's not thriving yet.
No. I was up there. Titans lost to the Jets in a big surprise last year. He made some good throws on the move. They've got a good wide receiving core.
Mm-hmm.
Breece Hall has some promise. You know, their offensive line's a little bit messy with the Becton injury and filling in with old guys and all of that. He's got a chance still. But he's certainly not thriving. You have to be playing to thrive.
He's barely surviving at this point. And if, you know, old Joe Flacco keeps coming from 20-plus down in the fourth quarter and leading comebacks on the road, that's not going to bode well for Zach Wilson. He's definitely in the survival category at this point. And, Paul, I mean, you said it. Part of it's not his fault. You know, he's injured right now. So I reserve judgment on that, but he is definitely in survival mode.
And he's got some young receivers. Corey Davis comes up big. He's not young. He's a vet now. But they've invested in that in the draft as well.
Elijah Moore.
That's paying off. Trey Lance, surviving. Surviving.
I need a third category for him.
I do,
no,
too.
He's surviving because he got hurt, and he now has another year to do things behind the scenes with Shanahan.
But
that's why it's
the
surviving.
I think the leash, he's done for the year. So I think the leash next year, and this is what happens, it gets shorter year by year,
yeah.
Right? So this year he had a pretty long leash. It was his. He was going to have to, and they were talking to the veterans, support this guy, all of that. That goes away now, especially if Garoppolo does just fine. And so next year, he doesn't get that. And then, you know, if he gets a chance or two and he's not good, all of a sudden we forget about him.
Yep.
And not just us. They start to forget about him. And all of a sudden it's over for the guy and he's playing. He's a backup somewhere else.
Well, we forget about the 49ers if he is a bust in reality because of what they gave up for him in draft capital, right? Just to move up to get him at number 3 overall. Justin Fields.
Can I answer on Trey Lance?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Expound.
So this is what's very difficult about this. Kyle Shanahan is a very smart guy. But Trey Lance going down for the season, and the 49ers are going to win, I believe they are, with Jimmy Garoppolo, and they're still not going to be overly dynamic on offense. Even so, it's going to be difficult for even young genius Kyle Shanahan to completely move on to Trey Lance and away from Jimmy Garoppolo if they end up going on a playoff run again, which this team is capable of doing. So if what happens with the 49ers this year is what I'm expecting now, that Garoppolo's not going to screw it up for him, he's going to make just enough plays to be highly successful, I don't know how even Kyle Shanahan goes back into next season and said, hey, it was the Trey Lance show a year ago, bad start, then he got hurt, but it's the Trey Lance show again. It's going to make it more difficult. If Jimmy Garoppolo sucks, it makes it very easy for Trey Lance. I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo is going to suck, though.
I don't think he's going to suck either, but I do think he's going to get hurt. And when he's hurt, I don't know what the hell they're going to do.
He does get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. Justin Fields, number 11 overall to Chicago.
He ain't thriving.
Surviving?
Yeah.
Surviving. I had the under for 165 yards passing on Sunday Night Football for him. He had 42 at halftime. I was feeling pretty good about things. So that's barely in survival mode.
I saw this somewhere, and I agree. Justin Fields is who Lamar Jackson haters think Lamar Jackson is.
That's all
you need to know.
That's a good analogy.
That's fair.
Mac Jones in New England. If you didn't watch on Sunday, it was a struggle, but Mac Jones made some big plays that ended up helping New England get their first win of the season on the road in Pittsburgh.
Thriving is a strong word. Thriving indicates success. I don't feel like he's having success.
He's had more success than Trevor Lawrence, and we said Trevor Lawrence was thriving.
Well, he's had more last year. He's in a new system with new guys, and I don't feel like the arrow's up.
He's not with Josh McDaniels.
I would say for this offense where they are right now, he's thriving. Because they're not asking much out of him. I don't think he's ever going to be a superstar in this league. But for what he's been asked to do, I'm going to put him in the thriving category. What impressed me most about the Patriots on Sunday, watching the end of that game, all the Pittsburgh needed to do was stop them running the football late to get the ball. And they could not do it. It was 8-9 yards
their
a carry.
Their run defense was an issue last year.
By the Patriots. And I'm thinking, you know they're going to – Mac Jones isn't throwing it. They're going to turn around and hand it off, and they could not stop it.
It's very un-Pittsburgh-like.
But very impressive by New England.
To have a bad run defense and then not fix it.
Yeah, to run when everyone knew they were going to run.
Thriving is too positive a word for me for him.
Kyle Trask, back up in Tampa Bay, but has a role. As we continue to roll through this, he was the 64th overall pick. That's high investment for where he is on the pecking order of three quarterbacks
for
the
Bucs. If Brady is working for Fox next year, is Kyle Trask looked at as a good replacement for him next year? I don't think he is.
He's barely backup.
Barely hanging on as a backup right now, and would have no faith in him being the guy when Brady retires, which is going to be very soon.
Kellen Mond was drafted ahead of Davis Mills, who we're going to get to, but he's now with Cleveland. He was cut by Minnesota. And he was cut going into year two, drafted 66th overall by the new regime that's more offensive focus. So
yeah, they didn't like him.
Yeah,
I'm going to put him into a third category, dying.
Yes.
No third categories.
Davis Mills.
He's thriving. Guy's a pretty good quarterback on a pretty bad team.
Now, he was not good Sunday against Denver.
But overall?
He was awful. He also is quarterbacking a team that has an extremely low bar to meet right now.
Limited talent.
So, it's crazy.
Is he really thriving, though?
I mean, he's thriving for a third-round pick that's a starting quarterback that no one really believes in.
Right.
It's all about perception of who he is.
Contextually
and I'm thinking,
thriving.
But, I mean, if I'm looking at second-year quarterbacks that are starters in the league, I'm putting him squarely in barely surviving mode. It's the fact that he's overachieved based on what we expect. We get John McClain on and ask him about Davis Mills. He acts like he's the second coming of Johnny Unitas, and we all laugh at that. Yeah. But yet the guy continues to hang on, and he's not terrible. So, I mean, based on what I think of Davis Mills, he is absolutely thriving. Based on the league and actually having a franchise quarterback, barely surviving.
He could be the starter there next year. And if he's the starter there next year, he has thrived.
Right now,
and they could have a top three pick.
Tannehill is completing just 2% more on a completion percentage. That's 2% higher than Davis Mills, just to put that in perspective. Same thing goes for passing yards. He's in the bottom third of passing yards in the league. By the way, you want to know the top
one
three?
Weapon, right?
Let's give you the top five.
Who's their second weapon after Cooks? Nico Collins?
Well, their second weapon should be Dameon Pierce based on the preseason, but they're not working him in.
He doesn't have a lot, is my point.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Your top the top five passers through 2 weeks, I think two of them are relatively easy to guess.
Tua's got to be close to the top after this
week. He's number one. He's number one.
Josh Allen.
Josh Allen is in there, yes.
No, Lamar didn't have a lot of
Pat Mahomes.
Second.
Pat Mahomes is just outside at six.
Okay.
Give me a second. Let's go.
Jared Goff.
Jared Goff is
I'm taking a flyer
further
here.
Down the list.
Okay.
He's not in the top 15.
I need teams in front of me. Teams. Give me
so
standings.
I don't know if you it'll take you a while.
Herbert?
Herbert, yes. Okay. So we have three of the five. Two is number one. Josh Allen is
for the record, I've gotten all three of them, Paul. Your turn.
Josh Allen is two is one. Josh Allen is fourth. Herbert is fifth. We're looking for two and three.
Give me a second. Stall for a second. Sing for us, Chad.
Not Mahomes.
Sing for us,
Chad. It's not Aaron Rodgers.
It is not.
I'm just looking for standings.
Cooper Rush.
Cooper Rush.
Let me...
It's certainly not Joe Burrow.
It's not Russell Wilson.
Nope. Although he's top 10. I'll give you guys 15 more seconds.
You said it's not Mahomes. I know. Commanders.
Yes, Carson Wentz.
Carson Wentz has done quite well.
Second in the league right now in passing with 650 yards.
Yeah, he's been pretty good.
And number three, guys, I don't think you would guess this, Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco
would not have
is
guessed
third
that.
In NFL in passing, ahead of Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, ahead of Josh Allen, who whipped the Rams and the Titans secondary. And Joe Flacco has more passing yards.
I've got Carson Wentz as a backup to Tom Brady in a league. And, I mean, if you look at the numbers, it looks ridiculous to be starting Tom Brady over Carson Wentz. Ridiculous.
Hit us up with your thoughts, Thriving and Surviving, at Outkick 360. Coming up, the mansion. Brady was once renting this mansion in Tampa Bay.
His first year.
From Derek Jeter. And wait until you hear the details of what's taking place there. That's next at Outkick 360. Coming up, we'll take a look at Thursday Night Football, kicking off tomorrow, Pittsburgh and Cleveland. Then Christian Hackenberg joins us. That's in roughly 30 minutes from now. Looking forward to that conversation on college QBs. So Derek Jeter rented out his mansion in Tampa to Tom Brady and Giselle last year, or 2 years ago. 2 years ago. And the
year one in Tampa.
Yes, year one. He since sold it for $22.5 million, which is a record price for this area ever. Most expensive home sold ever. 22,000 square feet, 7 bedrooms, 12 baths, a gym, a theater. I mean, you would expect that. Gym, theater, 80-foot saltwater pool. It is now, it has been purchased, and I would assume when I saw this story that, there's a difference between being rich and wealthy. And if you buy something for $22.5 million and you're tearing it down, I would assume you're rebuilding a better home there. But, Paul, you mentioned the Post has it as a commercial.
Yeah, the New York Post says it couldn't get a comment on what the plan is for it, but it said records filed in the last week show a demolition application for commercial purposes has been submitted.
So I thought, they're tearing this thing down. I mean, it's gorgeous. It's beautiful. It's not old.
It's only 1.25
like
acres.
It's like the Giselle of properties.
But these neighbors would have to sign off on a residential place being made into a commercial thing, and I can't imagine they would like that.
The commercial thing really throws me off. My assumption was if you're tearing that down, you're creating some sort of condo system or multi-home. Like you're going to put multiple nice homes on that
lot.
Again,
it's only an acre and a quarter, though.
Yeah, space-wise. But I mean, you could put some, we see tall and skinnies going up all over Nashville. You could put things that are higher.
We should mention it's on the bay.
There's got to be a height limitation based on blocking everybody else's view. I'm very curious to know what goes there.
Me too.
Brady did say in his interview with Howard Stern that while Jeter did a good job kind of privatizing it, but when he was in the backyard, people could see him, like boaters going by, the fellow filthy rich, and other people. It's not the most private of mansions. You think of mansions of this style.
Well, yeah. Do you think
there is no yard, by the way.
Do you think
it is literally right on the bay.
Do you think in the year that Tom and Giselle lived in that place, they used all 12 bathrooms? Or were there bathrooms that were unused?
If you live in a house like that, I think that's one of your missions as soon as you move in.
Yes.
Have sex in every room.
But like every guy.
Use every bathroom.
Every guy would have their favorite bathroom, though.
Yeah.
Or
that one's fine. The furthest one away.
Taco night. That's a lot. It
only works
place.
In like small homes compared to this. I mean, I don't know
if
it's taco night, you may not make it across.
I'm taking
this
the
place.
Shuttle to bathroom 12. See you in an hour.
We haven't checked out the one in the second gym yet.
Is the iPad charged in bathroom 12?
I just can't imagine buying this and tearing it down.
No. It's insane.
Yeah.
How old is it?
It doesn't look old.
No.
I mean, I've seen the pictures, and it does not look old. No.
You can refurbish
like
that
Giselle.
If need be.
Headlines when we return on Outkick 360. Hang with us.